Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What's the current and future for long-running Jewish Life television? Learn both when Executive Vice President Bad Pomerantz joins me next. Great news for fans of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, a digital double album of songs from this iconic CBS series featuring an eclectic group of performers gets re-released this month. More from Grammy-winning music producer Dennis Scott next half hour. And our 30-minute finale highlights DivaBoxOffice.tv, arguably the lesbian answer to Netflix and other mega content enterprises. Founder proprietor Christian Baker connects with us live from Australia. Also ahead, ATX TV 2023 preview, our new classic trivia winner, and somebody revive the New York Television Festival. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you for joining us on this first Friday of March 2023, 45 degrees the top of the hour here in the Big Apple, and you are right on time for the program all about TV's current and future. Big 90-day edition coming your way, great guests all the way through, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You'll catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. We've got a chat room in business for you right now, so if you don't like the phone, use the room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, as always, you can connect with others and interact with them through Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Stream. Follow the instructions of people to be live with you. Jewish Live Television Executive Vice President Brad Pomerantz joins me from Los Angeles after these news notes. Final details are in place for ATX TV Festival 2023, originating from Austin, Texas. Edition 12, set for June 1st to the 4th, will feature season premieres of The Righteous Gemstones on HBO and Cruel Summer from Freeform. If you're keeping score, 3 and 2, respectively. Both events will have post-screening panels with Raiders producers and cast members. Other TV series spotlight include Grownish, Late Night with Seth Meyers, and Accused, plus a Cheers 30th anniversary salute featuring Ted Danson, George Wendt, creators Glenn and Les Charles, and director, the Emmy winner himself, James Burrows. The exodus of consumers from cable and satellite television service expanded last year. More than 5.8 million people canceled their monthly cable or satellite connection in 2022, compared to 4.7 million the previous year. That's according to Leishman Research Group stats. The cable provider Comcast alone encountered 2 million sub drops. Comcast is the nation's largest cable operator. Now, quickies, Miley Cyrus headlines the Disney Plus Endless Summer Vacation music special March 10th. First play begins at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific. Florida Man, starring Edgar Ramirez, launches on Netflix April 13th. Ozark star Jason Bateman is co-executive producer. And ABC's Oscar pre-show countdown special next Sunday night will be co-hosted by Ashley Graham, Lily Singh, and Vanessa Hudgens. And that is News Notes for today. Now joining us live from Los Angeles, our first guest for the day, the Executive Vice President of Jewish Life Television, Brad Pomerantz. Brad, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Brad, let's catch up on Jewish Life Television. I believe you're now in your 16th year of existence. How are things going?
Things are going very well, actually. We are a network that looks to appeal to people of all faiths. We are Jewish-themed, but we're really more of a cultural network than a religious network. Our friends in the Christian television space, they're very religious. There's a lot of praying and seeking donations. We're a network just like BET might appeal to African-Americans, but also to people who are not African-American. So we are thrilled that we have an audience that includes Jews and non-Jews, and it's a lot of fun. We have Bubbies setting people up on dates. We have Fauda on the air, a well-known show from Israel. We have Servant of the People on the air, which is, of course, a show that catapulted Vladimir Zelensky to the presidency. So we're a network that continues to grow, and it's been a great treat to be here.
I want to get to the Vladimir Zelensky series. Of course, obviously, that before becoming president of Ukraine and how you were able to get hold of it. How many households can now see you, whether on cable, satellite, or through smart TV sets, devices, and bundles?
Right. It's funny. I heard you talking about Comcast. So we are available through several of the largest video providers in the country, including Comcast and Charter and Cox and then satellite provider DirecTV. On DirecTV, we are available nationwide. Anyone who has DirecTV can get us. With Charter, Cox, and Comcast, we are available in most of their markets, although not all of their markets. We are also available on some smart TVs. What's interesting about JLTV is we're still leaning into cable, even though there are some entities that see cable as an industry that's struggling. And like you said, Comcast lost 2 million subs. Our viewers are a little bit older. They like their cable providers. They like having a channel guide. And so we're still adding homes. I mean, Cox launched us last year in many of their larger markets. So cable is still part of our model. Of course, we are and will be expanding into smart TVs. Zumo, which is a Comcast product, we're available on Zumo. But we're speaking to all the TV manufacturers about launching. We actually have deals pending as we speak with some of the largest TV manufacturers. We want to be available wherever anyone wants us. To answer your question, in the most traditional sense, we're available in about 50 million homes. With smart TVs, it gets confusing and complicated, but through kind of traditional cable and satellite, we're available in about 50 million homes.
And how has your format or your content evolved, particularly in the last couple of years?
So, it's a fractured landscape. There are so many choices. And so we want to give people a reason to come to JLTV and stay. And so we decided in the last few years to start to seek out some higher profile acquisitions. And that's how we came to acquire Fauda, which you may know. It's an Israeli series that airs on Netflix. We're the only network that airs it that's not a streaming platform. Prisoners of War, which is one of my favorite series of all time, it actually was ranked the number one best show of the 2010s internationally by the New York Times. That is what became Homeland. So Prisoners of War was the inspiration for Homeland and Showtime. And then, like we just said, Servant of the People, which is what launched Vladimir Zelensky into the presidency. And so, we see those shows as a way to bring people to the network. They're well-known. And then we have original shows that we hope to grow and continue to build. I'm proud to say that a couple of years ago, before the pandemic, we had a show that was actually getting a lot of attention. It's called Bubbies Know Best, and it's three Jewish grandmothers setting people up on dates. Jews, non-Jews, gay, straight, old, young, doesn't matter. They're setting people up on dates. And the show is getting a lot of heat positively. The Bubbies were on Steve Harvey and Access Hollywood and TMZ. When the pandemic hit, it really, put a huge damper on it. But we're bringing it back. And so that's exciting. And we hope to, kind of use the allure of some of the higher profile acquisitions to show people our originals, and then they'll stay.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get to where the future stands with original programming on your service in a little bit. We're speaking with Brad Pomerantz. He's the Executive Vice President of Jewish Life Television. It's available to more than 50 million households around the country through cable, and also starting to get into smart TV sets and devices and multi-channel bundles, one of them being Bundlewise is Zumo. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. We're just getting started with a 90-minute edition on this Friday afternoon of Smart Me Televised, first one for March 2023. Simon Alban with you live from New Haven, New York. If you have a question or a comment for Brad, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Smart Me Televised, for all you fans of the popular PBS series Call the Midwife, we have some fun news for you. We're going to feature a woman named Dr. Annie Gray. She has just put together a cookbook inspired by Call the Midwife, and she'll be on Monday as our lead guest, and we hope to offer copies of that book as an upcoming classic trivia prize, hopefully starting on Monday. That's Dr. Annie Gray, the author of the Call the Midwife cookbook that's available starting later this month, and she'll be on live with us, I believe live from London. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brad, how are you able to get the series with the current Ukrainian president, Vladimir Zelensky?
We asked. Literally, we asked. as you may know, as your viewers may know, Mr. Zelensky is a he's of Jewish descent. Both his parents were Jewish. All of his grandparents were Jewish. He is the descendant of both survivors and victims of the Holocaust. To me and to many people, you know, the fact he's Jewish is tangential in terms of his presidency, of course. But he's, as we say in the Jewish religion, he's a modern-day Maccabee. I mean, this man is an absolute hero. He has looked at Russia in the eye and stared them down. And we just felt as if, you know, we wanted to further introduce people to really a 21st century giant. I mean, I think he will go down as one of the 21st century's most impressive figures. Just in December, Time magazine named him their person of the year. And, you know, what people may not know, some do, is that, you know, he was a very highly respected comedian in the Ukraine. And on this show, Servant of the People, I mean, life imitates art and art imitates life. He is a history teacher who is catapulted into the Ukrainian presidency. And the show was a huge hit in the Ukraine. And, you know, in some ways, look, we put a star, you know, we put a few actors in the presidency, Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump. Ukraine did the same. They put Vladimir Zelensky in the presidency in 2019. And a lot of people thought he wouldn't be able to manage this Russian invasion. And he's been seen as a huge victor. I mean, the war still goes on. But, you know, to make a long story longer, we simply asked. We reached out. The distribution company that happens to be based in Sweden, and we were able to negotiate the deal, and we're thrilled to have it on the air. We're the only television network that has it. Streaming, there's a streaming service that does, but we're it. Can't find it anywhere else in North America.
Have to ask, does he know that you're running it? Has he communicated with you directly?
It's such a good question. We don't know the answer. We have, you know, thought about it. I mean, I'd love to get your thoughts, Simon, as a new friend. You know, we've thought about reaching out to some of the actors, including Mr. Zelensky, to see maybe they would do a promo for us. But we're a little hesitant. We just don't know if that's classless. So if your viewers have or your listeners have ideas, we have not reached out. And we're struggling with whether we should. We just don't know if it would be seen as crass, given what the Ukraine is facing right now. And we're still debating it internally. I don't mind airing that to you and your listeners. It's a tough call. What do you think, if I can turn the table on those? Should we reach out to Zelensky and the actor?
Well, I'm going to hold off giving a public opinion. Got to digest it for a bit. But I would love to get our listeners to chime in on this. So what do you think, folks? Yeah. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and we'll let you know in upcoming episodes, one way or the other. You mentioned before that you run Prisoners of War, which, of course, became the huge hit Homeland on Showtime, and Fauda. We have covered on this program the work of Keshet, the Israeli production company and programmer that has done a lot in terms of English and Jewish language or Hebrew language programming, become formats all over the world. Do you work with Keshet to develop programming? Has there been any thought about working with them or other programmers in Israel as a pipeline for their work?
So we haven't worked with Keshet or YES, which is the studio that does Fauda, to develop shows. That's something that we've talked about, and we may move into that space. JLTV has not done any original scripted programming yet. You know, scripted programming is incredibly expensive. We haven't entered that space yet, and we have toyed with working with them. I mean, I can say this publicly because when I interviewed the members of the Prisoners of War cast, I talked about the fact that, you know, Prisoners of War only did 2 seasons. Whereas Homeland did 9 or 10, and I've always said they should do a 3rd season of Prisoners of War. And so, you know, we've kind of toyed with whether we could partner with Keshet on a 3rd season. You know, the challenge would be it would be 10 years later. But we, you know, are incredibly impressed with what Israel has put out. You know, Netflix is running right now Beauty Queen of Jerusalem, which is just outstanding. And Shtitzel, also an outstanding show. And these shows attract audiences that are Jewish, non-Jewish. I mean, I don't know if you saw, you know, Fauda season 4 is launched on Netflix. They have huge numbers coming out of the Middle East. And I don't mean Israel. I mean, you know, Arab lands. They love Fauda. And so we're proud to have Fauda on our air, given that it is, you know, crosses so many cultures in such a dramatic and positive way.
Have producers or production companies come to you and suggested, I'd like to do a scripted series with you, or
yes,
either production or co-production, or an unscripted show, or a genre show, whether it's a game show, a talk show, a variety show, et cetera, with you?
Absolutely. We absolutely have been approached. We're in conversations now. We should talk in a month because we have a big announcement coming up on a show that I think will be quite stunning. It is not scripted, but it is a show that I'm incredibly passionate about. I'm honored to be the host of this show. I wish I could tell you now, but it's not. We haven't released it yet. And I will also say, just, you know, if I can be parochial for a second, you know, I'm honored to be, you know, an executive that also hosts. And the show that I host now is called Air, Land, and Sea, which is a travel show. And I literally have the opportunity to travel around the world and do these long form, I'll call them travelogues or documentaries about the history of the Jewish people and just general tourism in the places that we go. I was recently in Morocco, Turkey, Malta, Spain, and Portugal, and Czech, and Barbados, and Jamaica. I mean, there's Jewish history everywhere, not just, you know, Eastern Europe. And that has been a huge gift. I started my career covering politics and left that about 5 years ago, and now, you know, hosting this travel show as well as, you know, running scheduling and other things at JLTV. And it is, you know, for a history nerd like myself, to be able to tell the story of the Jewish people, not so much the Bible, but, you know, the history of Jews, you know, over the last 1,000 years in the various countries we visit has been a huge gift.
How do you balance both roles, Brad, executive and host?
Yeah. No, it's a great question. I mean, it's a challenge. It's a huge challenge. But, you know, if Andy Cohen can do it for Bravo, I figure I can do it as well. I'll tell you this. I think one of the reasons why I am able to manage both is I started my professional career as a lawyer. I was a lawyer for almost 10 years, actually. And those skills that I learned both in law school and as a lawyer have allowed me to be able to look at it could be a script for my show, or it could be scheduling the network, and synthesize my thoughts fairly quickly. And so that has been a great background. And so, you know, I'm able to move with a certain alacrity that I think I gained as a result of my years in the legal practice. And as you know, Simon, I'm sure, you know, there are actually a lot of lawyers in Hollywood, and I use that term broadly, you know, New York's Hollywood too. And I think the reason why lawyers are successful in Hollywood is because they're able to think, beginning, middle, end. It's linear, you know, whether it's scripted or non-scripted, everything's linear. And so I think that's how I've been able to be successful in both roles.
Jewish Live Television is now available to over 50 million households through cable and growing also through smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. Brad Promise, the executive vice president of the network, he is also one of their hosts on various programs, as well as the one he just told you about. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Time I'm with you from the other side of these United States, namely Nueva York, where it is now 45 degrees coming to the bottom of the hour. If a question or comment or remaining minutes with Brad, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on our program, we will feature, among others, a new series coming up on Canela Media's Canela Kids channel. It's their first animated series. It's called Super Ellis, and it's very unique. It's produced here in the United States in Spanish, and it's all about role models of famous women who are Latinos for kids. We will talk to the head of Canela Kids on the program and talk about that and other projects in the works. That's coming your way Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And stay tuned to our next half hour because, among other things, we have a brand new classic trivia winner. We'll tell you who that winner is, the winning answer, what prizes that person will get, and what's ahead. So stay tuned. That's coming up near the top of the hour. Brad, how are you doing in terms of ad support? Do you carry national ads, and how are you doing
there? Yeah, thank you for that question. So to get a little bit of inside baseball, we don't get sub fees, subscriber fees for the cable net, from the cable systems, Comcast, DirecTV. We are 100% advertiser supported. And so that is what we rely on for our revenue. And so we are doing well. I mean, you know, it's a process. I'm not an ad sales. I oversee a lot of the network, but not ad sales. But we do get some national accounts. I mean, everything has to be national at a certain sense because we are a national network. You know, we really can't sell local. And occasionally, you know, L.A., Miami, New York, someone will do that because those have large Jewish populations. But we only seek actively national advertising. We have some direct response, which is not a surprise for a niche network. But, you know, it's a challenge. It's, you know, in a fractured landscape. It's a challenge, but we're doing it. You know, we're doing it, and we're proud that we're plugging away. We made it through the pandemic, but you know, our head of ad sales, Tom Daniels, is always, you know, out there pounding the pavement. Part of the challenge is to really kind of explain to the advertisers that we are a Jewish thing television network. That's not a prayer network. We're not a religious network. We're a cultural network. We're not, you know, TBN, we're BET. We're not CBN, we are Logo. You know, that's the distinction. We're cultural. We're a lifestyle entertainment network. And once we're able to explain that, you know, we're a network, you don't need to be Jewish to watch JLTV. I mean, 80% of our audience, Simon, is non-Jewish. 80%. That's a big number, you know, if you think about it. 80%. And,
Brad, has there been any thought about doing an event either here in New York or where you are in Los Angeles or in between, sort of connecting the press with national advertisers or ad agencies to explain your case, to make your case?
Yeah, so I guess you're, at some level you're referring to like the an upfront presentation. We have not done kind of a dog and pony show. I mean, upfront presentations are these massive events. We have done events in New York. We have. I happen to have been at the HBO facility. And so we continue to reach out to those advertisers. Again, it's not my direct space. But, you know, we are always looking for advertisers that are forward-thinking, that appreciate our audience. It's a grind for the ad sales department, but they're doing a great job. They really are. And what I would also say is, and I would say this to your listeners for any television network, if you like the television network, support their advertisers, because that really is what advertising is about, especially if I can be so bold to say their direct response advertisers, the 1-800 numbers, because those are tracked. You know, some may see direct response as cheesy, but they support, you know, a lot of television networks, especially smaller ones. And, you know, we rely on them for their support.
Well, Brad, you should know, and our listeners know, that this past Wednesday, a subsidiary of the Association of National Advertisers held an event here in New York called Growth Fronts, where they invited independently owned emerging networks that cater to African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, Asian Americans, the gay lesbian community, disabled community, have the opportunity to meet face-to-face with advertisers in an all-day event. And it may be something that your service might want to look at for next year because the what they call the Alliance for Inclusion and Multicultural Marketing, they made it very clear they want this to be a every year event, a expanding event from year to year, and to really get the ad community involved in supporting networks like JLTV. So maybe that might be an opportunity for next year.
But that brings up an interesting issue, because part of the challenge that we have, and anyone that's kind of advocating for the Jewish community, is, are we seen as a diverse community? Because, you know, most Jewish Americans are not of color. We are not black and brown. We are white. We consider ourselves a diverse community, and so we seek to be included in diverse spaces, but sometimes we aren't included in diverse spaces because we are not, you know, of color. And so I welcome, you know, folks to ponder that, because it's we're offering a diverse voice. And so we would love to be welcome to diverse spaces like what you just described.
Yeah. Brandon, the time we have left, aside from the program that you can't talk about yet because you're a month away from announcing it, what are some of the other original shows and other programming that will be premiering, let's say, in the coming months on your network?
Yes, so Bubby's Know Best is coming back. And I will say this, we're looking for folks who want to be set up by the Bubbies. So if you're interested, can I say the email on your show, Simon?
Sure.
Yeah, bubbiesknowbest@jltv.tv. Send us an email if you want the Bubbies to set you up. Three Jewish grandmothers. You could be Jewish, non-Jewish, young, old, straight, gay. It doesn't matter. The Bubbies are setting people up on dates. More episodes of Air, Land, and Sea, the show that I host. We were in Morocco recently. Those episodes will be released. And more, a lot's going on in development that will be announced soon. So maybe in a couple months we can, you know, come back on your show and let you know what we're doing. But it's a, it's an exciting time to be doing what we're doing, and we're really honored to have the opportunity to speak to Jews and non-Jews, young, old, gay, straight, about, you know, Jewish life, Jewish culture, the Jewish experience, because that's really what JLTV is. We're about the Jewish North American experience. We are in Canada as well. So we're talking about, you know, Jewish life, Jewish culture. And we think that's accessible to everyone. I mean, there are plenty of people who watch BET that are white. There are plenty of people that watch Univision that may not be Latino. And so we welcome people of all faiths to watch JLTV.
Is there an area of Jewish culture that you're not covering on your service right now that you would like to get it out there, to get it out in the open in the year ahead?
Yeah. I feel as if, and I'll say this publicly, that the newest, very quickly, there were basically three waves of Jews that came to America. The first wave were the Sephardic Jews, which are of Spanish and Portuguese descent that were expelled from the Spanish Inquisition. Then there were the German Jews that came in the 1800s. Then the Polish Jews and the Eastern European Jews that came in the 1900s. The last wave, the fourth wave, were Persian Jews that came after the Iranian Revolution. And they are a huge part of the Jewish community in America, and really the American community generally. And it is my goal to tell more stories about Persian Jewry, because it is a rich culture with wonderful people who have large families, and they love each other, and their history is stunning, and their food is tasty. And so when you talk about Jewish culture, I want to tell more stories about Persian Jews. I really do.
Jewish Live Television, JLTV. It is now available to more than 50 million U.S. households through cable operators like Comcast, Cox, etc. Also, it's available on Xumo, the multi-channel bundle that is programmed by Cox. I mean, formed by Comcast, the nation's largest cable operator, and hopefully it will go on other smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles soon. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, live.jewishlifetv.com. That's live.jewishlifetv.com. And once again, Brad, if people want to be on the Buddy Show, the Bubble Show, give them the email one more time.
bubbiesknowbest@jltv.tv. And like you said, you can go to our website to learn more about us, jltv.tv.
You got it. Brad Promen, thank you again for coming on. It's been a pleasure to have you on. All the very best going forward with your network. Keep us posted about the new show that will be announced in about a month. And we'd love to have you back anytime. It has been an honor and a treat.
Thanks so much, Simon. Good luck to you. Great show.
Thank you so much, Brad. Take care. All the greatest. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Shabbat shalom, as they say.
Absolutely. You too. And your whole crew and team. Brad Pomerantz from Jewish Life Television joining us live from Los Angeles. And Shabbat shalom, by the way, to all of our Jewish listeners who we respect, along with the rest of our listeners too. Absolutely. And when we come back, We will, for all you Mr. Rogers neighborhood fans, we've got the Grammy-winning music producer Dennis Scott, who put together a very unusual project called Thank You, Mr. Rogers. And also coming up in the next half hour, our new classic trivia segment winner. All coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and TuneIn.com. Together, reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out CRS Radio, the Caribbean radio show, next Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on BTR. That's the CRS Radio Caribbean radio show, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute first one of March edition of Tomorrow We Tell Her. That's March 2023 to be exact. Tom and Avon with you live from New York, 45 degrees, the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you with us for our first Friday edition of March 2023 and first of the month as well. If you have a question or comment or an hour ahead for our guests, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In the late 1960s, a really amazing pioneer in children's television named Fred Rogers came to life with a program called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It has since become, decades later, a classic. It originally started on the Eastern Educational Network out of WQED in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but a year or two later went national on what was then called National Education Television, National Educational Television, now PBS. In that 2019, my next guest put together a very unusual tribute to Fred Rogers, who incidentally, in a couple of weeks, would be 95 years young if he was still with us. That's on March 20th. In 2019, as I said, our next guest put together a very unusual double digital album called Thank You, Mr. Rogers. It consists of songs performed on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, all of them written by Fred Rogers. Of course, he worked with his wonderful music director, the late and great John Costa. And the people involved in the album, very eclectic, from the Cowsills to Marilyn Hugh and Billy Davis to, believe it or not, Vanessa Williams, and a whole lot more. Joining us live to talk about this very unusual project from Nashville, Tennessee, Music City, USA, the Grammy Award-winning music producer, Dennis Scott. Dennis, welcome in.
Hi, great to be here. What energy you've got going on there.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. Well, it's guests like you that turn the energy up. What can I say? Dennis, how did Mr. Rogers come your way as a project?
Well, it came unexpectedly, to be honest. I was actually in my kitchen watching TV, and I was eating a sandwich, and on came Mr. Rogers. This is when his show was still aired in most of the PBS stations, and he was singing this wonderful little song called It's You I Like, and I was just enchanted with it, and I said, I wonder if anybody else has recorded this material aside from Mr. Rogers himself. And to my surprise and joy, nobody had. And I thought, well, this could be an opportunity to really do something interesting with his music that's never been done before. So that's what I did. I set out to reach out to all sorts of artists in the music industry who might be fans of Mr. Rogers and might want to take on putting their own personal stamp on some of his songs. And that's what we did. We accumulated a roster of people whose names everybody will know, like some of the ones that you mentioned earlier. And we reimagined Fred's songs, gave it a little bit of a musical facelift, and they are radio ready now. And if you're a Mr. Rogers fan, or even if you're not, you're going to be just surprised and delighted by the fact that this man was a great songwriter.
In fact, I understand that there is a petition out by a lot of Mr. Rogers fans to get him into the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Yes, I've kind of become a Mr. Rogers cheerleader, especially when it comes to his music. And, a great song is a great song. And if it is a great song, it could be done in a multiple of styles or sung by a lot of different people. And we've proven that to be so. I think Mr. Rogers is underrated as a writer because he's so associated with his TV show and the way that he would present the songs, which was totally appropriate to look into that camera with his red sweater and sing one-to-one to an audience of children who believed they were talking directly to him. And that was perfect, but these songs have a life beyond there. And if when you listen in a different context, you see, wow, he really was a gifted and a well-crafted songwriter. He knew what he was doing with words and with chords and with melodies. And so I want to make sure that he is appreciated not only for his wisdom and kindness, but also for his songwriting ability and the fact that he is truly one of America's great composers, and he needs to be recognized for that.
Fred always delivered the songs in a very low-key manner, accompanied by, as I mentioned, John Costa and his wonderful musical arrangements, whether it was piano or with his band, as the series went on. And, of course, I remember watching Mr. Rogers for a long time. The opening song, Won't You Be My Neighbor, then there was the closing song, Tomorrow, later on replaced by It's Such a Good Feeling to Know You're Alive. How easy was it to get, A, the songs to do, and then, B, to assemble the players to sing them?
The songs are not a problem because I think the copyright law says once a song has been recorded, as long as you pay a royalty for using it, you're entitled to use it. The artist is another story. If we were in the same room together, I would show you my legal pad, which has about 50 pages, single lines of all the people in the music industry I contacted or reached out to be part of this project. And with all due respect, a lot of them have tours and other obligations, and they couldn't make it. Others, have managers that are pretty strong gatekeepers. And then the ones that we ended up with are the ones who really had a heart for doing it and were happy to be part of the project. And I like the fact, like as you mentioned, it's an eclectic group of people. I didn't want it all to be one genre of music. I wanted to. I think all kids and adults like to hear different styles of music. And Mr. Rogers' songs, unbelievably or believe it or not, they really adapt to a variety of styles. So it wasn't easy. And in fact, on the first Mr. Rogers album I ever did, which was a number of years ago, I had to get permission or at least the blessing from his company. And I was so afraid that after I recorded the album that perhaps they wouldn't like what I did with Fred's songs. I mean, these are treasures. But after it was done, I got a phone call from Fred's wife, Joanne, and she said to me, Dennis, I just heard the album. I love it, and Fred would have loved it. And that kind of brought tears to my eyes and said, okay, I think we did the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it's even better than a Grammy to hear that from the mouth of Joanne Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Music and Memories is being reissued on March 17th, and we are talking with the Grammy-winning music producer involved with the project, Dennis Scott. He joins us live from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy you're joining us as well for our first episode of March 2023. Simon Albarn with you live from Nueva York, 45 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Want to hear from you. Give us a call, all you Mr. Rogers fans out there, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And we'll be spotlighting another PBS series, a classic one that's been around now for nearly 15 years called Call the Midwife on Monday's show. We'll be speaking live from England with Dr. Annie Gray. She's so inspired by that popular series that she has written a cookbook, which is coming out this month, called Call the Midwife Cookbook. And we're going to offer it, we hope, as a classic trivia question prize starting on Monday. Dr. Annie Gray, the author of the Call the Midwife Cookbook, Call the Midwife, very popular on many PBS stations and around the world on various television systems. She'll be with us live from England, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Did you gather everybody for one recording session, or did you do a set of recording sessions with various people to put the album together?
Well, luckily in Nashville, there were a few artists that live here, so that made it a little easier, like Kelly Pickler and Lee Greenwood. Jim Brickman is not that far away. But the rest of them, Jackie Velasquez, she lives in Nashville. But the rest of them, I had to go to various places for the Cowsills and for Mickey Dolenz and Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. I needed to go to, and Tom Bergeron. Believe it or not, Tom Bergeron is singing on this album. And by the way, he's a very good whistler as well. But I had to go to Los Angeles for that. And that was exciting to be standing shoulder to shoulder with Mickey Dolenz and the Cowsills and these people who are music legends, people who I grew up with who, it's almost like a body, out-of-body experience, just standing next to them thinking, wow, I'm actually working with this person.
And Dennis, in the case of Nikki Dolenz and the Calistos, both of them have TV connections. Of course, Nikki Dolenz was one of the people involved with the Monkees, which was a group that came out of a television series, an Emmy winner, by the way. And, of course, they had a great career during the 2 years that series ran, the late 60s on NBC. And, of course, the Calistos, for those who don't know, one of their hits was Love American Style, the theme song by Charlie Fox. That they actually sang the first season of that show, that popular tune from that series. It ran four seasons, I believe, and a little change on ABC. So, and by the way, what was it like to get those Mickey and the Calistos together?
Well, actually, we did both recording sessions on the same day. And parenthetically, I'll mention that, and a lot of your listeners will know this, that the Calistos were the inspiration for the TV show The Partridge Family. In fact, they at one point were asked to be the featured actors on that show, but then the producers of the show thought, well, maybe we need people who are professional actors and not musicians, and that's the way that went. And hence came along David Cassidy and his mom. So, but now I forgot your question.
But that would be very interesting to have, in one case, the Calistos, because of the Love American Style connection, and the Partridge Family, as you just said, but also Nikki Dolenz from the Monkees.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, so we started the session for the Calistos fairly early in the day, and it's a good thing that we did, because the Calistos are famous for all their layered harmonies, you know, vocal after vocal. Great harmonies, and we wanted to capture their sound, so that meant a lot of vocal overdubs in the studio. And by the time we got done, we had to place a call to Mickey and say, hey, Mickey, would you mind coming like 30 minutes later than we had scheduled, because we're just running a little bit behind schedule. But luckily, it was a good restaurant. We sent out for some food, and everybody was happy, and we all worked pretty hard that day, but the energy was there. Just everyone is willing to give everything to Mr. Rogers.
What about Tom Bergeron? I mean, we know him as probably the best live television host around, Dancing with the Stars, great game show host with Hollywood Squares. Anything he does it in a superb way. This is definitely a new dimension that we're hearing with him, singing and whistling.
Yeah, no kidding. Basically, when I started this project, we didn't have a record label. We didn't have financing for it, and I thought it was going to be maybe just an album of interviews with people talking about Mr. Rogers, because that was a little bit more affordable, and I knew it would be heartfelt, and I knew it would work, but we needed a host, so we reached out to Tom Bergeron, and somewhere in the midst of that conversation, some of the artists, musical artists, came on board, and all of a sudden it was no longer a spoken word album. It was a full-fledged music album. And so we said, well, now what do we do with Tom? And I asked him, you don't sing by any chance? He said, yes, I love singing. And he loved Mr. Rogers. So we got him in the session, and he did a song, and he was great. We hit it off right away, and he's so congenial and so sincere when he looks in a camera and talks to you. So, and somewhere in the middle of the session, he started whistling. I said, wait a minute, what was that? And he said, oh, I just like whistling. And I said, well, you're really good at it. Can we work this into the song? And we did. So when people listen to his song, which is called Some Things I Don't Understand, you know, Great Mr. Rogers song, you will hear Tom Bergeron doing his vocal rendition of that song and whistling in the middle of it.
Wonder if somewhere down the line we could have a Tom Bergeron live variety show where, like, he sings and does the, you know, he's like a semi Ed Sullivan or Andy Williams or Sonny and Cher, whatever, you know, a variety hour with him. Let's see. Maybe you've gone on to,
absolutely.
Maybe we've latched onto something here.
Well, you know, he was on an episode not long after the album came out of the Masked Singer. So, and there was a little reference to the Mr. Rogers in as well. So, and he did pretty good.
How much of an effort was there to match individual Mr. Rogers songs to individual talents, whether it's the Cow Sills or Mickey Dolenz or Marilyn McCoon and Billy Davis or Vanessa Williams. I'm wondering if there was a real effort to, like, try to match the songs to the particular individual talents.
That's a great question, and you're exactly right on target, because that was probably the biggest challenge, you know, taking Fred's songs, and he had 200 of them that he wrote, and just plowing through them, and I kept a list of the Mr. Rogers songs on one side and all the names of the artists we were working with, and I started to draw arrows to each one, said, well, this song might fit Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis, and then I'd do a little demo on piano at my recording studio and, you know, try it on for size, and eventually, once I landed upon something, I would create a demo for them, send it to them to make sure that they felt it was a right fit for them. And I'm happy to say that we guessed pretty much on target for the songs. In fact, I love to, when people come over, I love to play Fred's original song back-to-back with the song that we ended up doing. And you can see it almost sounds like a Council song, or it sounds like a Sandy Patty song. So, yeah, I'm very pleased. That was the biggest challenge, but I'm really pleased with the way it turned out.
Did you give any or all the artists any advice, like, for example, do what Mr. Rogers did. Do this as if you're talking directly into a television camera with one specific person. Because that seemed to be why these songs were so impactful to everyone watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, because people felt like he's talking to me. He's looking out in that camera, and with those wonderful John Costa arrangements, whether it's with piano or with a small band, you know, drummer and et cetera, that he's singing to me. He's expressing himself to me.
Well, you're right. I mean, we wanted to capture the spirit of Fred in the way that he did things. And the great thing about working with artists like these, I mean, they are such pros, and they instinctively know what to do, and they instinctively know how to honor Fred in that way. And take the song that Vanessa Williams sings. It's called There Are Many Ways to Say I Love You. And I guarantee you, I mean, you need to keep a box of Kleenex next to yourself, because she just emoted it, and with a sincerity, not trying to show how many vocal acrobatics she can do, but she sang it plainly, simply, the way Fred would. And I think it really, it captures the song in the same way emotionally that Fred could, but with, you know, a different musical treatment. And that's one of my favorites. It just gets me every time.
You're hearing Grammy Award-winning music producer Dennis Scott. He joins us live from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, and we're talking about the reissue of a project he actually did back in 2019 that is now going to be available starting on March 17th on Amazon.com, other places as well, and that is the 2-record digital album, Thank You, Mr. Rogers, Music and Memories. And if you have a question or comment for Dennis in our final minutes with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Simon Applebaum with you along for the ride. Happy you're with us on Tomorrow Televised. 90 Minute Edition coming your way this Friday afternoon. And coming up for the top of the hour, we have a brand new classic trivia winner, our fourth of the year, our first in several weeks. We'll tell you who it is. We'll tell you the winning answer and what that person is going to get. So stay tuned, and we'll have a brand new classic trivia question for you on Monday's show. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And if we don't get a winner by end of Monday, we'll post the question on Tuesday morning on Facebook and Twitter. So stay tuned for all details. That's coming your way before the top of the hour. Was there one or two songs that really hit the spot that showcased songs that a lot of people don't know about that Fred Rogers did, that really are some of the, like, the sleeper, if you will, songs on the album?
Yeah, there are a few of them, actually, because I, as I mentioned, I had done, back in 2006, I had done another Mr. Rogers tribute album, and there are, of course, some songs that you just have to have. You can't have a Mr. Rogers album without his theme song. But I wanted to kind of go into the deeper cuts of Mr. Rogers, if you will, One of them is the Mickey Dolan song called Perfectly Beautiful Day. It's not one that is as well known, but it really lent itself to a little bit of that Monkees vibe. The Jim Brickman song called This Is My Home, interesting because Jim Brickman is not particularly known as a singer, but he has a nice voice, very well suited to the song. And the song has only like a phrase or two of lyric, and the rest of it is kind of repetitive. So it was a great opportunity for Jim to use his musical facility on the piano to fill that in, and all of a sudden it became a full song. I think it's true also of the song that Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. sang. When they left the Fifth Dimension, you may remember they had a song called You Don't Have to Be a Star, Baby. And for some reason, that song was in my head. And when I came across the song called Let's Be Together Today, we orchestrated it kind of as a tip of the hat to their hit song. And I think it really worked well. But that's a song that not as many people know. Now, one song that people know, but they will not recognize it immediately, because we did the first and only Spanish version of Won't You Be My Neighbor, Podemos Ser Amigo, and John Secada sings it, and man, you should, I mean, it almost sounds like a Latin love song. My wife came down into the studio, and she was cavelling, if you'll, you know, with respect to your previous guest. I said, well, you don't seem to do that for me. And she said, well, you're not John Secada. So.
He's a wonderful singer. I still love one of his classic songs, Just Another Day. If you haven't heard that song, it is marvelous. So no doubt that he will, you know, he did a fantastic job. Before we go, what are you working on right now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have a couple of children's projects in the works, but I also play with a Beatles tribute band called the Wanna Beatles, and they keep me pretty busy as well. We're touring, and we're going to go out on a tour coming up pretty soon, so we have to get up to speed, and we're always trying to put together interesting smash-ups of Beatles songs, and we do the entire Rubber Soul medley, which is, I think, about... We get it done in about 14 minutes because we just truncate songs and just give the highlights of them. And it's a different kind of Beatles experience. We do a lot of comedy on stage. People say I'm short and that I look like Paul Simon, so we do a parody that I wrote called The Sounds of Nonsense. So anyway, it's a different kind of Beatles experience, but I tell people it's like the most fun job I've ever had because I'm a huge Beatles fan.
By the way, when it comes to the Beatles, do you find that people like the songs from the early years more, you know, the song like She Loves You, I Want to Hold Your Hand, et cetera, the songs from A Hard Day's Night and Help, as opposed to Sgt. Pepper, Lonely Hearts Club Band, and To the Finish?
You know, there is something to be said about those early songs. I mean, they're just so upbeat and captivating. And they just exude youth and energy. However, I will say that you really can't get away without doing a Beatles show without doing Hey Jude, which came later. And the White Album is a lot of fun. So we take, I think, about 8 songs from the White Album. We put them into medley form. And it's interesting how, you know, practically none of those songs were singles, yet everybody knows, you know, Obladi, Oblada, and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, by the way, before we go, about doing another project dealing with children's television songs or theme songs?
Okay, I'll get on it right away. It'll be on your desk by tomorrow morning. Well, actually, into making sure that people hear the current album, the Thank You, Mr. Rogers, and also, I'm hoping your listeners will go to our website, which is thankyoumrrogers.com, and there they can even vote to support Mr. Rogers in this little effort to get him into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. So right on one of those pages, you know, just scroll down and you can vote for him and, you know, keep Fred's musical legacy alive. So that takes up a lot of my time. But, yes, I have some children's shows, one that is hopefully geared to be on public television or children's television soon. And it's about the world's first tooth fairy. So I wrote a theme for that, and hopefully we'll be involved in the production when it gets started. So there's always something on the horizon. But right now, Fred's birthday, as you said, is coming up on March 20th, and we're going to have a little party in Nashville to celebrate and have some people sing songs and watch this video I put together called Happy Birthday, Mr. Rogers, which is also, I think, you can view that at our thankyoumrrogers.com website. So there's a lot to do.
And once again, this double digital album, Thank You, Mr. Rogers, Music and Memories, will be reissued on March 17th. It'll be available on Amazon.com, other sites as well. And as you heard, to get more details about that and also to see this special video that Fred Rogers, of course, 95 years amazing, his birthday celebrated on March 20th, it's thankyoumrrogers.com. It's thankyoumrrogers.com. And do check out the album. I've heard it. I've heard some of it. It's really amazing. And a great tribute to one of the great, great people ever to do children's programming. Really not just children's programming really for all of us, because we all grew up on, a lot of us grew up on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and it's great to hear that that his wonderful music, which he did, and again, I do want to credit also John Costa, the music director, because he helped bring Mr. Rogers' wonderful musical joys to life. Dennis, thank you very much to you and everybody involved for making this happen. I hope it does extremely, extremely well, and I really appreciate you coming aboard this half hour with us. Congratulations.
Oh, it was totally my pleasure, and thank you for being such a kind and generous host and for the work that you do in radio. I've been listening to your show, and it's just a joy listening to the variety and all the things that you bring to it.
Thank you very much, Dennis. I deeply, deeply appreciate it. Thank you so much for that. And wish you all the greatest. If you do a TV project, by the way, we'd love to have you back on. And in the meantime, have a fantastic weekend ahead. And again, great, great success with this project.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. Take care.
You too. All the greatest. Dennis Scott, Grammy Award-winning music producer of Thank You, Mr. Rogers. Again, it will be reissued on March 17th, double digital album. And again, his birthday, 95, will be celebrated on March 20th. For all details, it's thankyoumrrogers.com. And I do agree, he belongs in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. So you can find out more about that campaign as well through that website, thankyoumrrogers.com. Time now for our classic trivia segment, and we have a winner, our first in several weeks, our fourth winner of the year, and it's Charlene Weiser from New York, New York. That's Charlene Weiser from New York, New York. Congratulations. Coming your way will be the new best-selling book, 7 Ways to Become a Famous Doctor by Roland Perez. He is the host of the popular PBS series America's Health Journal. It's also available 24/7 on smart TV sets and devices. And coming your way as well will be the Petula Clark Ultimate CD and the Ricky Martin CD that includes his Nova hit, Living La Vida Loca. The question that we have posed the last week or so, who played Topper on the 1950s Topper television series? Who played Topper on the 1950s Topper television series? We told you that the people who played George and Marion Kirby were the husband and wife team at the time of Ann Jeffries and Robert Sterling. We also told you that this person later on became the boss of some very famous people in a secret organization that was one of the most influential shows of the 1960s. The answer, Leo G. Carroll. And, of course, that organization was Uncle of the Man from Uncle fame, training those debonair secret agents Napoleon Solo and Yuri Kuryakin, played by Robert Vaughn and David McCallum, who's still around doing NCIS weekly on CBS. So once again, Leo G. Carroll played Topper on the 1950s Topper television series. Charlene Weiser of New York, New York got the answer. Charlene, congratulations. Prizes coming your way ASAP. Thanks for playing and thanks for listening to our show. Brand new classic trivia question coming your way on Monday. We hope to offer that Call the Midwife cookbook as a prize or one of the prizes then. And if you know the answer when you hear it on Monday, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. If you're a previous winner or a guest on this program, you are not eligible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of Monday, we'll post the question Tuesday morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum. Twitter, UBC Simon, TWT. As we always say around here, In order to win, you got to play in. That's what Charlene Weiser of New York, New York did, and that's why she is a winner this Friday afternoon. When we come back, we are going live to Sydney, Australia, and we are going to be speaking with the person behind DivaBoxOffice.tv, out to be the Netflix of lesbian television, Christian Baker. She will join us live as we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 80 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want to be in the know about sports, check out Post Time with the Greek tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio. A lot of things happening in the world of sports these days, whether it's college and pro basketball, the college basketball road to March Madness, both men and women's, is happening over the weekend, plus the XFL, hockey, and a whole lot more. It's Post Time with the Greek tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday, March 3rd, 2023. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Tom Allen with you live from New Weber, York. Another great guest coming your way in a big way from Sydney, Australia, over these next 30 minutes. And we want to hear from you, so give us a call. Here's the number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Chat room is still open. Simon Apple 04 by name. It's at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And once again, you can interact with others by using Facebook Timeline. Found the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. And now joining us live from Sydney, Australia, where it is already Saturday morning, the co-owner of DivaBoxOffice.tv, out to be the Netflix of lesbian television, Christian Baker. Christian, thanks for being here.
Hi, happy to be here.
Tell us about DivaBoxOffice.tv. We already have a number of services aimed at the gay and lesbian community, namely programs like Reverie, which, by the way, was featured at the Growth Front that took place here in New York on Wednesday. I know that you're a newcomer to the field. Tell us all about your service.
Yeah, sure. So DivaBoxOffice.tv was actually started in the UK in 2019. And then this past year, I was approached by the folks who were running it because they know I have a history. I started a streaming company called Telefilms.com 16 years ago that was also focused on the lesbian and queer female community and had moved away from that. And they asked me if I would be interested in relaunching their service and taking it worldwide. And I was absolutely ecstatic. I think it's kind of not part of but tangential to the Diva Media Group brand in the UK. And they already had some great original content. And so I said, yes, I would love to. And we relaunched DivaBoxOffice.tv with a brand new lesbian holiday rom-com called Mary and Gay this past December. So just super excited to be making original content for and running the streaming platform.
Dr. Northwest Media has just joined us in our chat room. Thanks for coming aboard. If you have a question or a comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Where is it available in the United States? I believe it's on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles. Which ones have taken the service so far, and what's been the reaction from viewers out there?
Yeah, so we're available on smart devices through Apple, Google Play, Amazon Fire Stick, and Roku. I think people just really love, just apps, right? Like for us, it was, if you're not on an app, it makes it just that much more, difficult to be able to watch on multiple devices. So we're really excited to, we just launched the apps, in fact, this past January. So we were available on desktop only and then moved to, we're able to launch the app. So I just think that's kind of the, for a while I thought all TV and computers would be integrated, but the apps just really kind of took off. So we're on all the ones that we can possibly be on.
Dr. Northwest Media, who just joined our chat room, just gave us a thumbs up. So he likes what we're talking about. And and our show overall. So thank you for that. And tell your friends to tune in also and use the chat room as well. We do appreciate it. What is the philosophy of your service? What kind of shows do you want to do, and how, and what is sort of the attitude that you want to showcase about the lesbian culture, lesbian lifestyle, who lesbians are in the society?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's a great question. I think, you know, I, from the very beginning in doing content for, you know, niche audiences, I think you have to be sort of unapologetically focused in knowing your audience. And so over the years, I've done a ton of panels where people always talk about, like, once I, you know, kind of talk about how niche we are, inevitably they'll say, oh, well, don't you think you should open it up to the full LGBTQ community? Or don't you think that you should open it up to women programming as well as, you know, lesbian and queer women? And I've always stood very, very strongly when you have a, you know, a niche of a niche, like a subset of a group, you have to be unapologetically focused on telling stories for that community. And so even though I've had, you know, kind of pressure over the years to expand, I am unapologetically focused on making content for what I believe is also an underserved market. I don't think there is as much content out there for the lesbian and queer community, and so my goal is to make it so that they see themselves reflected in the media. And so, yeah, I think that has been, you know, my relentless focus in the content.
Mm-hmm. And along the way, are there any stereotypes that you want to break?
You know, it's not as much stereotypes as it is the stories that have been told in the past. So I don't know if you're familiar with this or some of the listeners, but in 2016, on television, there was an absolute carnage of lesbian characters who were killed off of some major television shows. In fact, it started the hashtag Representation Matters and a hashtag called Kill Your Gays Trope, and The Hollywood Reporter even picked it up. It was really bizarre. There were like 16 deaths of characters who were lesbian characters on major TV shows that were killed off. And it wasn't, you know, I know that it wasn't like all the showrunners got together and decided to, like, kill the lesbians. It just happened to happen. And I think there's and then earlier in TV shows, there were a lot of movies where a lesbian character committed suicide or killed themselves or, you know, were killed. And so I think one of the things that is a rule that we've always had is that the lesbian doesn't die in the end in any of the shows that are on DivaBlocksOffice.tv or anything that I make. And so it's not necessarily a stereotype, but more of a storytelling stereotype that we continue to break.
We are live from Sydney, Australia, with Kristen Baker, the co-owner of DivaBlocksOffice.tv, now available on some smart TV sets and smart devices here in the U.S. of A. And we have her live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Song album with you live from Nueva York, 45 degrees at the top of the hour. Want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, Duck Northwest Media, still in the room. Again, coming away on Monday, for all you fans of the PBS distributed series Call the Midwife, very popular British series, I believe it's now 15 years on the air and counting, we'll have live from England, Dr. Annie Gray. She just became the author of a new Call the Midwife cookbook, which we hope to offer starting Monday as a classic trivia segment prize. As Dr. Annie Gray, the Call the Midwife cookbook author, she'll be with us live from England, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What are some of the original programs that are currently running on your service?
Yeah, so we have a movie, like I mentioned earlier, called Marion Day, that is totally original, made for DivaBlocksOffice.tv. And we just launched February 28th, the first two episodes in a limited series called Scare B&B. And so that's something that we have that is just launched, and we're in post-production on the next three episodes. So we're really, really excited about that original content. And then we have a few other, you know, projects in the pipeline that we're looking at getting funded. So we're really focused on having original content for the site.
Talk more about Scarebnb. How did you come up? I understand you created the idea, wrote the scripts, directed also at least one of the episodes. How did you come up with the idea?
So I had some friends of mine who stayed at a rental house, and the hosts were very I'm trying to think of like the right word. The host of the house like showed up to greet them, you know, which is really lovely, but they were very attentive, shall we say. They popped over for dinner. They like knocked on the door. They stayed, you know, for a really long time chatting with them. And my friend was like, you know, I didn't want to be rude, but they just wouldn't go away. And I just thought, gosh, that's kind of a funny, you know, nuance. And as I told people about this story, more people came to me with like their crazy stories. They'd be like, oh, well, this happened to me when I, you know, rented a home from someone. And so I just thought, gosh, what happens if you kind of ramped up or amped up the drama or the thriller or the horror, and it turned into this kind of crazy, bizarre situation. And that was the first iteration of these two episodes, where you have these over-friendly hosts who kind of won't leave the girls alone. And again, because I make lesbian content, at least, you know, the main characters usually identify as lesbian or queer. So in this, these two episodes, all four are friends and identify as lesbian or queer women in the show. And so they're coming to a vacation home to enjoy, you know, one another and to go to this like music festival, but the hosts are just kind of really creepy and weird. And so the whole time you're trying to figure out like, is the house really haunted? What's going on? What's happening to them? And so it's just really kind of spawned also other stories, like I had mentioned, of what can happen when you rent a vacation home. And so we're going to be releasing more. We have three that are actually being written at the moment that I want to go into production with sometime this year. And so it's going to just be kind of an ongoing limited series.
So this will be like an anthology miniseries where either every episode or every group of episodes will be, what, a different house that's scary, or
correct,
a different group of characters that are the same house.
You got it. Yep, exactly. So the theme really is, you know, the situation of it's a rental home and something goes wrong.
What's it like directing this? You know, going beyond, you know, owning the service, but actually creating the content.
Yeah, well, directing is absolutely, and being on set, that's my happy place. That's the thing that I absolutely love to do. So as often as I can be on set, that's what I want to do. And so I had never directed, you know, a thriller before. And so that kind of was the fun part of it. My background has been mostly in like, Hallmark-like holiday rom-coms. And so what I really thought about in moving into thriller is, you know, the thing that you're doing in those is you're creating tension, right? You're creating tension around every corner, like what's going to happen. And the thing with rom-coms as well is you're creating tension. It's just a different kind of tension. It's that romantic love chemistry tension. So I just thought, okay, if I can create tension between, you know, two people in this sort of like romantic situation, how does that translate into creating tension in a scary situation? And so I kind of put that lens on things, and that really made it fun for me and kind of gave me a way to think about, you know, the camera and the actors and, you know, kind of creating that, what's under the bed? Is there something in the closet? Is something going to jump up behind them? And so that was just really fun.
Damien, the president of Reverie, which is the gay and lesbian network that's available on, it has several channels, actually, on smart TV sets and smart devices, spoke at Growth Fronts on Wednesday. Semi-blatant plug, we did a story on it which came out today for MediaVillage.com. MediaVillage is a media research website. You can check it out. And one of the points that Damian was making, he's been on our show a couple of times, and we hope to have him back on very soon, is that he wanted to make clear to the advertisers and ad agencies present, whether they were watching at the Henry Luce Auditorium here in New York or by live stream from home or office, that the gay and lesbian population is a diverse population. There are people who are African-American and Latino and Asian-American and Native American and disabled, et cetera, who are gay or lesbian. That is their choice. Is that something that's top of mind with your service, that you want to showcase, you know, lesbians who are African-American, Latino, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Damian's absolutely spot on. I think one of the things that I've always tried to do in casting is to make sure I have diverse casting. So in an early movie, and in fact, all the movies that I've done, the leads haven't been that sort of quintessential, just like semi, you know, Caucasian woman. That we've had people who identify as non-binary, we've had women of color. And in fact, I've had two movies that have had two actresses who are deaf and queer. And so I have always tried to look at the various aspects of the community and make sure that there's representation in that aspect as well.
Incidentally, when you are dealing with an actor actress who is deaf or hard of hearing or blind, or in some way impaired body-wise, how do you deal with that on the set, but also how do you deal with it in the finished product? Do you have sign language? Do you, in the case of a deaf actress or deaf actor, how do you handle it?
Yeah, so I think on set, it depends on if they're deaf or hard of hearing and how they want to have communication. So in the very first movie that I did, Season of Love, Sandra May Frank, who went on to be in the TV show New Amsterdam and is just an amazing actress, we had an ASL consultant for both the script and making sure that we had the correct phrasing. And so we had an ASL consultant read through the script and just, you know, help us think about it through that lens. And then on set, we had ASL interpreters. And so that's the first time I directed an actress who was deaf. And so I just was, and I had an ASL consultant on set with me as well. And I was just sort of like, okay, you know, what do I need to know? What are my blind spots? And it was actually a really lovely, incredible experience. I think everyone grew from, you know, kind of thinking through a different lens. And what we did is we actually burned in subtitles to our movie, Season of Love. So when we showed it in any of the theatrical, this was in 2019, we had about 6 or 7 theatrical showings. It was all subtitled. And that was something that has obviously become really important to me, is to make sure that there's closed captioning on everything, if possible, on our site. So definitely all of our features, all of our series has closed caption. We try and do it with our short films, but sometimes the short film, they just can't afford it, or, you know, they don't have the money. So we try and help supplement that so that everything is subtitled for the deaf and hard of hearing community. You just make sure you have, you know, an interpreter on set and that you communicate as open and effectively as possible.
Those who don't know, ASL stands for American Sign Language. Kristen Baker, the co-owner of DivaBoxOffice.tv, she's our guest live from Sydney, Australia, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. If a question or comment on our many minutes with Kristen, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up before we leave you this Friday afternoon, a plea. Somebody, somewhere, revive the New York Television Festival. I'll explain why in a little bit. Since you're now on the air in the United States, are there any plans to sell national advertising on your service?
Not at the moment. At the moment, I believe that And we have a price point that's $6.99 a month, and if you buy for a year, it ends up being $5 a month. And so I think at that price point, it's affordable. I know that, you know, there's all so many streaming services out there that are, you know, kind of, you know, taking people's, I heard the stat, they have like, people have an average of 5.5 subscriptions or something like that. And as those are getting more expensive, I think if we stay at a price point, we're at an and instead of an or situation. I'm not taking advertising off the table. I just really want to focus right now on subscription services. And then we also have a rent or buy option for a lot of our features. So you don't have to subscribe if you don't want to. You can just go and rent or buy the project as well.
So it is true. You are really trying to be the Netflix of lesbian television. And incidentally, at the Growth Front event on Wednesday here in New York, it was noted that the gay and lesbian population is expected to have a buying power of $1.2 trillion. That's trillion dollars. $1.3 trillion. So in terms of original programming, where do you want to take the network?
So I want to continue to, expand the Scare B&B franchise. My goal is to have 4 features that come out each year and at least one to two series that come out. And I would, you know, my big hairy audacious goal is to kind of do what Netflix has done a little bit, which is, you know, if they see a series that's either going to be canceled or that has like a really good following, to be able to have enough funds to pick it up. I think that's many, many years down the road, but there's a lot of series that have lesbian or queer female leads that get canceled because, you know, sometimes the audience for like a Netflix or, you know, a Paramount Plus or a Hulu just isn't big enough to support it, but my platform could be big enough to support it. So I would love to be at a financial standpoint and a subscriber standpoint where I can save some really beloved lesbian-led or queer female-led series. So that's kind of a goal that I have, and be able to give funding to other female queer directors and writers to support and promote their work as well. So it's just a matter of how deep are the pockets, how many subscribers we have, and a growth trajectory. So, you know, we just relaunched in December, and, you know, we have big dreams, and hopefully soon we'll have deep pockets.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we have like about 30 seconds left. Are you getting proposals from producers or show creators that they would like to work with you?
We get all the time from mostly features right now, but yeah, we get pitched all the time for movies. You know, everyone's looking for funding. So we're in that group.
The service is called DivaBoxOffice.tv. It's out to be the network, or the Netflix, I should say, of lesbian television. You'll find it on smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel phones like Roku, Amazon Fire TV, etc. Others on the way. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, www.DivaBoxOffice.tv. That's www.DivaBoxOffice.tv. Christian Baker, thank you for taking time on Saturday morning, your time, down under in Australia to be with us. Congratulations on getting the network launched here in the United States. And hopefully much more success to come.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Christian. Take care. Have a great, great weekend ahead and beyond, too.
You do the same. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Christian Baker joining us live from Sydney, Australia, exclusively here on Tamavi Televised. Finally, before we leave you, a comment. Believe it or not, it's been 5 years since there was a New York television festival, a festival that had been around before the pandemic for over a decade. And it was, in fact, that event that got us going as a program 15 and a half years ago. Our first guest in the first Monday of August 2007 was Ned Kenny, at that time the programming director of the New York Television Festival. And we haven't had one in 5 years. Why? Well, obviously the pandemic. But what's really been amazing to me is that we are now post-pandemic, We are getting into the next normal, and yet it seems that despite the fact that we have other television festivals going on, including ATX in Austin, Texas, that we talked about in our opening news note, we had ATV in Atlanta, we have other festivals going on around the country, the Catalyst Story Festival going on now every year in Minneapolis, in that area, the Twin Cities area, Duluth, Minnesota, that we don't have a New York television festival. What is going on? It's time to bring it back. This was the festival that launched the independent TV movement and launched the TV festival movement. And frankly, it's outrageous. It is incredible that we don't have this festival back. Somebody has got to bring this festival back. And if its original organizers, Terrence Gray and Aaron Day, cannot bring it back for whatever the reason, the mayor's office of Media Entertainment here in New York, led by Anna Castillo, who's done a marvelous job with that organization the last 3 years, they should do it. Or Tribeca, which used to have a TV festival before the pandemic, a separate event, they should do it. Somebody, somehow, must get this event back on track. It is, again, outrageous, and I would also suggest embarrassing that the independent television community in the largest city in the United States and one of the biggest cities in the world does not have a TV festival all its own. It's been 5 years. It's time to get it back. By the way, if Terrence and I would like to come on this program, we've had them on before when they had the festival, to find out what is going on, we would love to have them back at any time. So come on, people. Somebody, some way, somehow, let's get the New York Television Festival back up and running. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming away on Monday, live from England, Dr. Andy Gray, the author of the new Call the Midwife Cookbook, which we hope to offer starting Monday as one of our new classic trivia prizes. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our wonderful website with the brand new address, tomorrowwilltelevise.com. We've made it so easy for you. And, of course, all of our wonderful podcast destinations, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify to iHeartRadio, Acast, podbean.com, and others. As always, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? Well, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. However you respond to us, we respond back to you within 24 hours. It's our promise. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Soderberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic first March weekend of 2023. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, our website, and all of our great podcast platform affiliates. Whatever you're doing between now and Monday, make it safe, and of course, make it great for you and others you love. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.